weeks ago, I was able to attend the Society for Scientific Exploration's yearly conference. One of the speakers, David Dilley, was talking about global weather patterns, cycles, and whether or not all of this global warming is actually caused by the rise in CO2. His conclusion, after 40 years of researching, is that CO2 is a byproduct of global warming and not the cause or contributor. We're going to hear the final report from David Dilley, founder and CEO of Global Weather Oscillations and climatologist for the past 40 years, today. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries.
Normally they say carbon dioxide peaks out at maybe 290 to 300 parts per million, and it kind of stays there for a couple thousand years. Well, that's if you're not looking at the peaks of the 230-year global warming cycles. There's other research done by, there's a researcher, Dr. Beck. What he took was fossilized leaflets, especially pine needles in the northern hemisphere, southern hemisphere. And he looked at the leaflets, because the leaflets have what we call little plant stomatas inside the leaflet. That's like our lungs.
Yes.
Our lungs, we breathe in the atmosphere, oxygen. So the leaflets, well, they breathe in atmosphere also, and carbon dioxide. And carbon dioxide, plants love carbon dioxide. So what he found was a correlation between how much carbon dioxide is in the air and to the plant stomatas. So he could determine over time, just like in ice cores, how much carbon dioxide is in the air at a given time. And the good thing about a plant stomata, using that type of research, it is not a mean value over a 1,000-year period. That leaf lives for 1 year. So you're getting a look at what the carbon dioxide was in a given year, not a mean value. So what his research found was, as I said, we have global warming cycles every 230 years. What he found was carbon dioxide normally peaks out during the warm period of the global warming cycle. Then in the course of only 100 years, carbon dioxide can drop as much as 100 to 140 parts per million in just 100 years. So what we would see during the past 1,200 years, we've had five global warming cycles, five global cooling cycles. So we'd see carbon dioxide going up and down over the course of each cycle as much as 120, 30 parts per million. And this actually happened in 1860. And this is very important. In 1860, instruments said we had 260 parts per million. That's instruments, not a mean value, instruments. Some ice core samples said carbon dioxide was 260 parts per million. The plant stomata science said we had carbon dioxide at 260 parts per million. Well, today, we're up around 385 to 90 parts per million. Instruments, ice cores, and the leaflets all say the same thing, that we're up around 385 parts per million. So this means that the plant stomata research is correct, that we do have large swings of 120 parts per million every 100 years, every 100 to 200 years. So the bottom line is that was a perfectly natural cycle from 1860 to now for carbon dioxide to rise from 260 parts per million to up near 400 parts per million, a perfectly natural rise in carbon dioxide.
And what I want to ask you about now is the pollution values. You know, obviously around industry, we have a lot of industrial waste. So are these CO2 levels not acting/reacting at all to these, and or how do you see this, and or do you see it as such a minimal effect? I mean, obviously we can see it, we can smell it, our breathing, the effects, you know, the fact that we do not have as much oxygen as you're describing, it's not a direct result of this pollution, but we do have this pollution. And go ahead.
Oh, we certainly do have pollution, and we need to address pollution. And we need to determine, well, what chemicals are, labeled as pollution. Way the EPA has it set up now, anything in excess can be called a pollutant, which means if we have too much nitrogen in the air, it can be called a pollutant. If we have too much CO2, if we have too much water vapor, anything, it can be called a polluting type of gas. Now, yes, we do have all kinds of chemicals being spewed into the atmosphere from industry and automobiles. We know that that's a fact. The big question is, how much of it during the past 100 years is from fossil fuel burning? We can see the signature of the fossil fuel type of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, but there's a big debate about how much of it is from our burning of fossil fuels of it and how much is natural. That's the big debate. Now, what I'm saying is most of the increase during the past 100 to 120 years, most of it is natural carbon dioxide. And even if we are adding some of the carbon dioxide to it, where we are up around 390 parts per million isn't really any different than we were back at about year 1000 AD, where we were also around 400 parts per million.
Yes.
So there really is not information out there that says, well, this is bad for the Earth. Now, some scientists will say, well, the oceans are becoming more acidified. It's hurting coral reefs. Their research goes back to maybe about 100,000 years ago. But that's when we were in a glacial period. And when I ask scientists, well, what did it do leading up to the last interglacial period that peaked 120,000 years ago, they can't tell me, or they won't tell me. We probably had the same thing as the oceans becoming acidified because of higher levels of carbon dioxide. These are natural cycles, and it will go away. It will go away when we enter natural global cooling.
Right. So do you feel like this is the single greatest misinformation that the global warming people are holding on to?
Well, what they're holding on to is global warming people. First of all, I should state, global warming is real. That is real. We all recognize global warming. Global warming is real. The question is, has man caused global warming? Well, we know, or people that know climate know, but during the past 100 years, this is a natural global warming cycle. However, the people that are really attached to man's involvement really aren't informed that this is a natural global warming cycle. They feel that the whole temperature increase is caused by man, and that's 100% untrue.
Yes.
I can go that high on it. It is 100% untrue. We are in a natural cycle. So the big problem comes down to, well, how much of it is of the carbon dioxide is caused by man burning fossil fuels? And the other question is it harmful? Well, there really is not any proof that the raised carbon dioxide has caused our temperatures to rise. They have proof in a test tube, in a laboratory, but in the free atmosphere, there is no proof. Absolutely no proof at all. There's more proof, looking at the natural cycles, that this is totally natural.
Yeah, there's something about that science lab that just leaves a lot out of the picture always. Isn't that true?
Well, that's true, and it really goes all the way back to what I was talking about, the United Nations Agenda 21 that started in 1988.
Why is the UN so invested?
Well,
do you think?
We do need to be good shepherds of the earth. That we need to be. And this is what the United Nations is trying to be. And I'm not totally against what the United Nations is doing, and I'm not totally against Agenda 21. But in anything, sometimes you go too far to the right, too far to the left. And this is what's happened on Agenda 21 to help out the poorer countries, is they feel that, well, this is a way to do a tax. That's the bottom line of this, is trying to get a tax to acquire money to help out the poorer nations from the richer nations. And also the other side of it is, well, we don't want to buy oil from countries that do not like us. And to get us off foreign oil, you know, we have to do a scare tactic to say, well, carbon dioxide is killing the earth, so let's eliminate gas and oil. Mm. And that's not a good way to do it. We do know that, yes, there's certain things we need to do to clean up the environment. We need to burn cleaner oil, cleaner gas, and we can do that. We can do that. So it really comes down to the United Nations, Agenda 21, and the G8 countries that have fallen in line with this and making all the agendas worldwide.
Yes. David, do you feel like there is better reporting / research in other parts of the world, better encompassing more of the whole picture in Europe or other places, India? Or is this a worldwide situation right now?
This is a worldwide situation. A lot of countries have fallen into the completely going green scenario, Australia and much of Europe. China, of course, has not, because they want the cheaper energy to keep production up.
And it's so disgusting there. I've been there.
Right. And we do need to clean up the environment where, you know, when you do burn oil and gas, and especially coal, you really need to clean it up when you burn it, because there's other atmospheric pollutants other than carbon dioxide going into the air. So that portion of it does need to be cleaned up. But it is a worldwide scenario because of all the countries tied to the United Nations, and they've made it a world agenda.
Right. You know, you brought up Australia, and this is perhaps a totally different subject, but what do you feel is going on with the holes in the supposed holes in the ozone levels and layers and all of that?
Well, I think some of it is real, some of it is cyclical, and we have not been recording the data for that long a period of time. Satellite data only came into about maybe early 1980s or so for it. That's a very short period of time.
Yes.
To say, well, we're doing something to it. When we're talking about global warming cycles that peak every 230 years, within between the 230-year period, a global cooling cycle. So we're talking about, you know, a swing from warm temperatures to cold temperatures within 100 years. But yet we're looking at something and saying, well, this is what's been going on for 25 years, and we have to do something about it. We have to be cautious on that. Yeah, there's some knowledge that, well, pollution is bad. We know that. But we do have to take caution not to go overboard until we know more about certain things.
Right. Where do you see the effects from cloud seeding, for instance, affecting the overall picture? Or, you know, do you feel like there's much an effect at all?
Well, cloud seeding, from what I understand, can help anyway in certain locations. It can help. The biggest problem would be, some things that a few nations would like to do, such as NASA has talked about putting a big umbrella up in space to shield us from the sun to cut down global warming. Well, that would be great, okay. And some other nations want to inject soot in the atmosphere to give us a little layer to help protect us from the sun. And there's a couple of other experiments also that they would like to do. What we need to remember is these global warming cycles come every 230 years. And we're already coming off the peak of the 116,000-year interglacial warm period. We're sliding towards an ice age, but don't worry, that's still 40,000 years away.
Right.
But our global warming cycle, we're sliding into a global cooling cycle for the next 100 to 140 years. You don't want to fool around with our solar radiation when we're ready to slip into a global cooling cycle.
Yes. And I know you've predicted you predicted already the phase one global cooling using the lunisolar precession. And could you talk a little bit about the lunisolar precession, the phase one, and then what you've said the phase two looks to be in about 2020? What will that look like for us on the Earth?
Okay, the lunar solar precession, essentially what it is, it's a gravitational cycle of the moon, combination of the moon and the sun on the Earth. If it was not for the combination of the gravitational pull of the moon and the sun, the Earth would spin out of control. It maintains our orbit, our wobble, so we need it. But there's changes in this, short-time changes. The big change comes every 116,000 years when we swing out further from the sun, so we have less solar radiation. That's when we're in our glacial periods, the last 30,000, 40,000 years. But right now, we're in closer to the sun, so we're just coming off that, where we've had the interglacial warm period, and this warm period lasts for several thousand years. But what happens is there are much shorter cycles, and this is what I researched. The shorter cycles, there are nine-year cycles, and in taking into account position of the moon above the Earth's equator, there's a nine-year cycle in that. And this has a great play on the Earth. It changes the gravitational tug on the oceans, inner core, outer core of the Earth for earthquakes, and volcanoes even, and the oceans and atmosphere. So what I use are the shorter cycles, the 9-year cycle, 72-year cycle, and 230-year cycle for the global warming cycles, the shorter global warming cycles. And what it shows is we are now coming off the lunar solar precession for the global warming cycle. We actually started to come off at around 2008, 2010, and the Earth is beginning to cool some. The oceans are cooling. But that's what I call phase one of global cooling. Phase two is going to be a very dramatic, rapid cool down, coming somewhere between 2018 to 2023. Could be as early as 2018. And what we're going to see is much like we saw between the period of 1800 to 1820, and then you get back to the prior cycle before that in the 1500s. What I looked at is the first 20 years of global cooling. And the first 20 years of rapid global cooling, I'm looking at somewhere between 2018 to 2030. Let's put it in that neighborhood, 2018 to 2030. Normally what we have during the really beginning, or first 20 years, rapid global cooling, and normally we have three very large volcanoes. This happened in 1815, volcano Tambora, a huge volcano. 1816 was the year of no summer. And that, although the volcano was in the southern hemisphere, it caused problems in the northern hemisphere as well. New England in 1816 lost 75% of their corn crop. There were killing frosts every month of the summer all the way down to Virginia. Ice in small ponds and streams in northern Pennsylvania in July and August. Lost potato crops in Ireland and parts of Europe. Even northern China lost their rice crops. This happened in 1816, and it happens just about every time when we come off the global warming cycle during the past, five, six cycles during the past 1,200 years. So we have a probability that this could occur, again, sometime between 2018 to 2030.
So, totally ridiculous. Are we going to get better surfing with the change of the tides here?
Well, there's going to be a lot of changes. And unfortunately, because of the science grant system to the universities from Europe, probably even Australia, and all the leading countries in the United States, we are not researching natural cycles. So the governments are head over heels into the global warming cycle. They do not realize that we could be going into a very, very dangerous global cooling cycle very soon, and we're not ready for it. If we have crop failures due to global cooling, back in 1816, we had 1 billion people on Earth. Right now, we have 7 billion people to feed. So if we have crop failures, we're not ready. We're not ready, and we need to heed the warnings, not by just myself, as other researchers out there also, with the same identical forecast that I have. We're all looking at similar scenarios coming up.
Right, and the whole vision of the short-sighted quick fix is pervasive. It's obviously pervasive in medicine, the silver bullet remedy and all of these things. So it's, science has been a wonderful tool, and it's kind of pigeonholed us into a lot of little tight boxes. And so I, for one, very much appreciate your vision and your study and your appreciation of the cycle.
Well, it is a very quick fix, and unfortunately, we're tied into the political atmosphere right now. It's a worldwide political atmosphere, and once you get tied into that, it's hard to jolt away from that. The media has been tied into it, and it's not the media's fault. This is the information media has been receiving from the universities and government systems around the world because of the grant systems. So the media has gotten tied into this, and they're not getting the other side of the story or the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say. You really need the whole picture to see what's going on, not just looking at a 100-year period and say, look what's happened during the past 100 years. I often say, we feel, okay, yesterday's temperature out in Colorado, well, you're 85 degrees, so you're saying, tomorrow should be 85. Well, when it's 95 or 75 instead, you say, well, what happened? Why isn't it the same? You want the same, you want today to be like tomorrow, or tomorrow to be like today, let's say. We don't like changes. Or we're very short-minded here. We don't have a real good memory on what it was in the past. And we fail to look to the past to see what the future will be.
Yes, that's going around, isn't it? Well, what's your next thrust with your research?
Well, my research pretty much right now I'm trying to do invited talks to get the word out. I have a great 1-hour presentation where I really go into things in detail and explain it so that everyone can understand it and to show why we have global warming, global cooling, why the ice is melting in the Arctic. For example, you saw my talk, and the ice in the Arctic melts from bottom up, not top down, because of warm surges of water in the Arctic, which are cycles, which are also cycles that I show on my research. Now, as far as my research in the future, I also do hurricane forecasting, so part of my research will be working more on my hurricane forecasting, El Nino forecasting.
Does it look to be an intense hurricane year this year, or what do you see?
Yes. We're going to have several landfalls. People should not, well, you're in Colorado, you don't have to worry about it.
Right.
But I'm from Florida. That's my home base, and right now I'm up in Maine. And I'm expecting both areas to get hit, and also the Gulf area. It's going to get very active by mid-August, very active.
All right.
It's probably going to be one of our worst years in the past, 7 years.
Okay. And as you know, here in Boulder, we have NCAR, the National Center for Atmospheric Research, also sometimes known here to the athletes as the National Center for Alpine Recreation, but that's another story. Are there scientists that or researchers that you keep in touch with there, or are they on a totally different agenda?
Not really. It's as far as the government agencies, it's very difficult to be on the same page with them because, well, I don't want to get into the political aspects of it, but they're tied into the political agenda or what the federal government wants. And so they can't really be on the same page with me or even talk about the same page as me. If they are on the same page as me, they can't really be on the same page as me, if that makes any sense.
Oh, it does. Yeah, sure. Well, I thank you so much. Would you like to share your website to everyone? And I know I thoroughly enjoyed reading your ebook, and I'm sure many of those out there would as well.
Yes, our website is globalweathercycles.com. Once again, globalweathercycles.com. And we will be hoping to have a bigger and better ebook coming out sometime in the future. I am getting more and more people backing me on what I've done in my research, and I think that will be one of my quests here in the future is to do more on it and hopefully in the future, a book.
Wonderful. As the corporatization of science and research grows and grows, I very much appreciate David Dilley and the work he's been doing as climatologist for the past 40 years and founder and CEO of Global Weather Oscillations. For any guest information, to listen to archives and share resources, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.